start to look into the future with all this hate, you start to see mirages, you start to see things. Sometimes you think you can see into the future and then, nah,
there's no water there, it's just the road.
Out. Well, that's right. But our guest, who calls himself a business futurist, his name is Morris Misalowski. He lives here in Melbourne. Thinks he can predict the top business trends for this year. And he says last year he predicted 10 things, and was it 8 or 9 came true?
9.5
came
true.
Wow.
9.5.
What were some of the things you're most proud of predicting, and they've come true?
I actually predicted that the economy would have a downturn. That was my half a point, though. I got it wrong by about 4 months or so.
Right.
I thought it would happen a bit later.
That's when no one else was.
Well, there
ready
were lots
to talk
of them.
About
I mean,
the...
you know, I must say there's a whole team around this, and certainly a lot of the economists that I were talking to were predicting this, but not to the degree that we currently see it, or certainly not as soon as we saw it.
Well, even earlier this year, just a couple of months ago, about 6 months ago maybe, when the financial meltdown first started, economists from very reliable institutions were still saying, well, you know, it's a bit of a downturn, but it's going to bounce back right up. Don't you worry about it.
We're still hearing that to some extent, although they've been a bit longer now. They're saying it'll bounce back. It'll be 12 to 18 months maybe.
Well, we've heard anything from it'll improve by early next year to it'll improve 2011, some saying 2013.
I'm an eternal optimist, so you've got to take that on board when I say something.
Okay.
But I believe that the economy will start to come back at the end of this year. Next year will be a better year, not a good year, it'll be a better year. And by the year after, we'll be back to what I'm calling a new sense of business normal. And I think that's what it's going to be. The reality is what we had before was a mirage, to use your word from before. It really wasn't a realistic, sustainable event. It had to burst at some time, and everyone said that, and we've had that burst. So the reality is we'll build that new sense of normal over the next 2 or 3 years. In other words, we'll be happy with what we have when we get through this yuck stuff over the next 6 to 12 months, and we'll say, that's pretty good. Let's say this is okay and keep going.
But one of your big predictions for this year is that Australia is best placed, more than most, or more than any other country, to recover.
I think so, and that's true of the whole Asia-Pacific rim, that we really are in a much better place. I wouldn't want to be in America, I wouldn't want to be in Europe at the moment. They're really pushing uphill tough times. Australia and much of the Asia-Pacific rim have good fundamentals. You know, underlying it, things are okay. We're just being swamped in that global economy, and that might sound a bit naive, and perhaps it is, but the reality is that our fundamentals are good. It's not going to take as much to get us back to where that new sense of normal is.
When the economists take out their magnifying glass on Australia's economy, they're all looking at Western Australia and resources and that huge connection with China.
Mm-hmm.
How big a factor is it in the Australian economy?
Up until now, it's been a very big factor. I mean, it's helped us to be a very buoyant, very strong economy. We know that over the last few months, 6 months, but certainly the last few months, that the Western Australian economy has come off, that a lot of the mining jobs that people were going for from the other continent where we are, the other side of Australia, really don't exist. And there are lots of planes coming back now with those miners and those people that went to support that mining. So certainly there has been a downturn in the Western Australian economy. It's not going to be as strong as it has been before. It's not going to support the rest of Australia's economy as well as it has before. China's obviously got some issues, but I still believe China is fundamentally strong. It has a long way to go. It needs to support itself, and it's made some really good, brave economic moves over the last 6 months to help achieve it.
Although it's hurt itself quite a bit, hasn't it, with reports of, for example, the melamine scandal.
Yes.
And all indications are that China's not going to learn from the scandal. I mean, the government has been tough on the victims, not on the victims, but the perpetrators.
Traitors.
But the analysis has been that it's very likely something like this is going to happen again.
And unfortunately, I think that's true, but that's a one-off, and certainly that is what we're seeing. But I still like to think that overall China is trying to grow itself. It's trying to be more than that one-off scandal. So I think that, again, naively, but I think very strongly that they're going to try and do the best. You know, we have some issues. One of the issues I have, again, is about the closing off, that before the Olympics, China was a bit more open, a bit more transparent. It allowed people to use the internet a lot more than it did. And that has ramifications across not only the economy, but across the people and the view that they're having of the world. That seems to be closing off a little bit lately. So I think that's an issue as well.
Okay, let's get on to all the interesting stuff.
Yeah, well, I was just on picking up on that melamine stuff too as well. I mean, one of the things you're sort of predicting for 2009, Morris, is that we're going to have a much more of a cautious consumer out there, a consumer who is either are they tight with their money or are they just more concerned about where this money's going?
I think they're tight with their money because they've got less of it, or they have the perception of less of it. Mm. That what we've all what's happened to all of us in the last 6 months is we've really been scared into a position that we're not used to. The last 10 or 15 years have been pretty good. I mean, ups and downs, but overall pretty good. The last 6 months have made us really scared, whether it's true or not, of our individual position, of what might be happening tomorrow. And even those people that believe that maybe tomorrow might not be so bad aren't willing to take the risk.
Well, especially those who've just gotten into the workforce for the past 10 years. This is all new. I mean, they've never they've heard of a Great Depression, but the reality of those times is not their reality.
Absolutely. And it's not even just the last 10 years. If we take those euphemisms of Generation X and Generation Y, you know, those born somewhere in the 70s through to the 90s, if we take those people, they've lived in relative prosperity. They've lived in times where their parents or their role models have had pretty much what they wanted to have within reason. Credit was relatively good. Unemployment was almost non-existent, in Australia anyway. And things were okay. I mean, you could go out the front door and be pretty safe that you're going to come back and get a good meal along the way and maybe drive a decent car and go out with your mates and do all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
And nowadays, you're not so sure about that. Hopefully, you still have mates, but, you know, you're not sure if you can afford the meal anymore and you're not sure whether you can go out to the cinema as much as you do. So maybe you're going to keep a little bit more in your pocket just in case tomorrow isn't as rosy as you hoped it might be.
And this leads into that idea of a kind of a more of a hippie or a DIY kind of element to people's lifestyles leading into 2009, which you're predicting too.
Yeah, and we're going back to the 60s for that. I mean, for a lot of the work I do, I try and find some rationale of what human nature was like at a time similar to the one that I'm seeing ahead of us. And if we look at the 60s, it was pretty much like that. It was very much a self-sufficient society. It was a society that looked after itself. It was very community-oriented, but did a lot of stuff for itself. It grew its own vegetables. It made its own clothes. It knitted. It crocheted. Made wonderful tie-dye T-shirts.
So we're going back to that, are we?
I think we're going back to all
of that. It's very interesting because we've just had a census come out, haven't we?
Yes.
The year two. Well, the census is a little bit old, 2006, but not that old. And basically saying that the people who are living in the cities have become more isolated. That has cost them happiness. And we're really more happy when we are connected to a community.
And that's true of
anthropology. And that's in the farms.
But that's true of all anthropology. I mean, man wasn't built to live alone. We were built as a gregarious tribal society. And from day one that we can read about our history, we always travelled in packs. Mm. It is what we want to do. And you're right about the society living in solo, what I call silos, solo and silo. Now, a lot of these buildings that we're producing now really are just places where people put their head down at night after they've done a hard day's work, but have no sense of community around them, feel very isolated, really have nothing to look forward to apart from the next day's work. And that's going to have some issues on some sectors of our society.
I mean, it also feeds in as well to business practice too. I mean, this idea of removing yourself from being a silo business, something that doesn't interact with other people within your field or with you know, people who are your consumers and other things like that as well, or even within your business. So can we see businesses being more sociocentric? I think that's the word you use, isn't it?
It is. And businesses will have to be that way.
Yeah.
You know, technology is a great barometer of what's ahead of us. And the technology that we see around us is really one of socialization. If we talk about Facebook, for instance, if we talk about, you know, MySpace or YouTube or any of those other sites, they're all social gregarious sites. They encourage us to go there and to interact with a whole lot of people around us, people we might know, people we might do business with, people we don't know, people we might want to know that share an interest in the same topics, whether that's orchids or growing roses or whatever else it may be.
Morris Misolowski is a business futurist. If you have any questions for what the future might hold or what the future is going to be look like in just about anything in the world, basically, send us an email. But you need to do that in the next, like, 2 or 3 minutes. Got to be quick. breakfastclub@radioaustralia.net.au or SMS +61 427 727 272. Now, you were talking about the new generation, Generation Z or Z, however you prefer it.
Some people call it the I generation.
Yes.
Some funny tags for all these things, aren't there?
I actually don't like any of those euphemisms.
Give us a better one, Morris.
I don't have a better one. I don't think that we need them is what I'm getting at. But the reality is that most people, as a shorthand way of coming to terms with what I'm talking about, are used to Generation Z and Y. So that's why I use them.
Yep. So what is the business place going to look like with these guys in charge? And what is it going to mean for older workers who may be reporting to these younger guys?
And that's a really good question, because Generation Z, which are those that were born somewhere around 1991, it depends on whose stats you believe, so somewhere between 1991 and this year, we're going to see the beginning of them going into the workforce. You know, the 18-year-olds, in other words, the very first ones of those, are just hitting the workforce now. They're coming to the workforce with a whole different viewpoint of what this world is for them. They're firstly the first generation that have ever been used to technology from the day they were born. You know, they're the ones who internet, who all that kind of, you know, World of Warcraft, everything they do online is just a natural extension of their life.
You almost need to speak a new language, don't you?
It is a new language. It's a new spoken language and a new written language if you look at SMS. So you're right. There's new mores, there's new culture, there's new language, there's all of that new expectation. And they also have a different expectation of career, that they see themselves as being their own vanguard or their own champion of career. There was a time in the 60s where their parents or grandparents might have joined the corporation, and that corporation was responsible for their career all the way through. So they might have started off in the mailroom, for instance, and worked their way through to director or CEO.
So loyalty pays no more?
No more. It really is gone. And we see that with our corporations today, the way they're shedding jobs. What Generation Z have worked out from their previous generation also is that if their careers are going to progress, it's going to be on their own back, that they're going to have to use their own skill set. Once they believe that they have nothing to offer that employer or nothing else to learn, they're going to move on to the next one. I talk about an average person staying at a job now for 2.8 years.
Right.
And this generation, 2.8 years.
And this You're looking at two people who've done way more than that.
Yeah. I mean, you're too long.
No. And also, with this generation, they're going to be the first one that are going to have six careers in their lifetime. Not six jobs, six careers is what we're predicting.
Total change.
So there might be a landscaper one career, they might be an accountant. The next year, they might be something, the next career, they might be something different.
And what is it in the psyche that makes us need to do those things?
I think it's part of the reality that we want to change. We want to do different things. We no longer feel, or this generation no longer feels, that they're so beholden to one company, which is what stopped us having these multiple careers. You didn't want to take the chance to not be with that company anymore in case something worse was ahead for you.
What happened to taking mileage out of all your years of experience and building on that, and then you're supposed to become an expert, so a consultant?
Well, thank you. So what's happening now, even if we look at the top end of town, if we look at the CEOs and the directors of large corporations, regardless of what the corporation is, they're doing exactly what we talk about. And that is that they're bringing CEOs in for a very short period of time, 3, 4, 5 years, with a particular skill set. So they might want to launch themselves onto the stock market, or they might be going through a merger. And once they've got that skill set, once that director has done what he or she does particularly well, he or she is ready to move on. The corporation's ready to move them on and bring somebody else in with a new set of skills. Mm. So all we're doing is looking at that going down, lower into the organisation.
Have you got any kind of predictions for 2009, Maurice, to finish off on, that are going to take people by surprise? Something that is kind of a little bit out of left field in terms of business, or in terms of the way society is going to work in 2009?
We're really going to become schizophrenic this year, that businesses that don't learn to do business online are going to be left by the wayside very quickly. And I'm talking about more than just doing the shopping cart, more than just having that bricks and mortar, the traditional shop online. They're going to have to learn to use the Facebooks, the MyBooks. They're going to have to learn to use Twitter, which is one of the new things, Twitter.com. They're going to have to learn to use those kinds of things, but in a collective way where they're giving information, where they're actually part of a larger community. And for businesses, that's a very unusual space to work in. It's one I'm doing quite a lot of work in over the last 6 to 12 months with businesses, hopefully moving forward as well. Working on what that social networking means for them and how they can progress their business on it. So I'd say that's the big move for this year.
I thought it was really smart when there was one burger company, I think, I'm not sure if this was in the States or somewhere in the region, that decided to use Facebook. And depending on how many friends you reject or depose of, then, you know, you get a free burger or something like that.
Absolutely. And there are all kinds of corporations now, especially the large end of town, that are doing that. The Fortune magazine out of America announced a survey only about 2 months ago where they said that 60% of all Fortune 1000 companies in the States would have some kind of social networking presence by the end of this year.
I told you there was a lot in that ball. Maurice Misiolowski is a business futurist. We'll get you back on the program in a couple of weeks.
I look forward to it.
Thank you very much. This is The Breakfast Club on Radio Australia. You have a website as well.
I do, of course.
And
it's Maurice, your eye on the future.com.
Fabulous. The Breakfast Club on Radio Australia. Stay tuned.